Well, hello again. If you keep your Bibles open, it'll be helpful, and you've got a sermon outline on your news sheet as well. Now, we're talking tonight about the topic of philosophy, believe it or not, philosophy. Philosophy is a Greek word that simply means the love of wisdom, the love of wisdom. And the job of philosophy is to figure out how this world works so that we can live in this world the best way possible. The opposite of this, the corollary of this, is if we are living in a way that's contrary to how the world works, well, things go horribly wrong. I liken it to people who use their screwdriver as a chisel. Right? You don't do that. Not only do you get bad results, but you damage your screwdriver as well. And so the job of philosophy is to ensure that we're not doing that in life, that we're actually operating the way the world is supposed to operate, and that gives us good results and avoids damage. And this is what James is talking about in our passage tonight. He says in verse 13, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom." Comes from wisdom. So what James is telling us in this passage is that philosophy is a good thing. All right? Wisdom is a good thing because it shows us the best way to live. But here's the thing about being human. The thing about being human is we've all grown up in a society, many societies, and all human societies have their own philosophies on what constitutes the good life. Now, when I use the word philosophies there, I'm not talking about sort of your classic Platonism or Stoicism or postmodernism. What I'm talking about is that societies will have their own views on what is required for the good life. So let me give you an example using Sydney culture, middle-class Sydney culture. Okay, middle-class Sydney culture says that a good education is a must for life success. And then after that, you've got to get a good-paying job, all right, so you can get a mortgage, but still have enough to buy a good coffee once or twice a day and eat, MasterChef quality food several times a week. Right? These are the things that Sydney says constitutes the good life. Now, if you lived in China or South America, you'd have grown up in a slightly different society. They would have slightly different philosophies on what constitutes the good life. But here's the thing. Because we've grown up in these societies, we've basically been immersed in our society's philosophies, we often don't even question them. Or we just go, well, of course that's required for the good life. Of course I'm going to get a mortgage. Of course I'm going to buy a good coffee once or twice a day. Of course I'm going to watch MasterChef this week to see some new exotic recipe that I can try out. Okay? So humans are completely blind to the philosophies of their own society. Now, as Christians, we want to be discerning in this. Because yes, our society will have some good philosophies, but because it is fallen, sinful human society, it'll also have some bad philosophies. And we want to know, as Christians, whether the philosophies that we adhere to, or that we live by, we want to know whether they're in line with God's wisdom. And this is why we read the Bible, is it not? To seek God's wisdom. Whenever we open the scriptures, whether it's at home or here in church, we're actually being philosophers. We're trying to figure out what the wise life looks like. The one problem in that is that the Bible is a really big and complicated book. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it actually takes several lifetimes to plumb the depths of the Bible. You and I will never get to the bottom of the Bible in our lifetime. It's too deep. It's too rich. And this is why tonight's passage is so attractive, because James actually gives us a summary of what the good life looks like, what the wise life looks like. But even better than that, he puts it against a benchmark, all right? He compares it to the bad life, the foolish life. And so if we can understand what James is getting at here of what constitutes the good life versus what constitutes the bad life, the foolish life, then we will be very well placed to be able to live, I guess, according to heavenly wisdom. We can see whether the philosophies that we adhere to are actually leading to the good life as opposed to the damaging life. And I take it that's what we all want. So let's dive in. James chapter 3, verse 14, we're up to. In verse 14, James begins his lesson on philosophy by looking at what not to do. But if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. All right, demonic. So James says that the bad, the sad, the destructive life comes from things like bitter envy and selfish ambition. So let's have a look at these. We'll just pull them apart quickly and see what he's getting at here. So to begin with, envy. What is envy? Well, envy is actually very closely related to pride in that it is competitive by its very nature. Okay? So in Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis says pride gets no so he's talking about pride here, not envy. He's talking about pride, but he says pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next person. Envy is the flip side of this. Okay? When we see someone that has more than us, we envy them. So you can see that pride and envy come from comparing ourselves with others, either comparing up or comparing down. If we feel superior to others, pride results. If we feel inferior to others, envy results. But envy goes even further than this. In the book Still Deadly, it's about the seven deadly sins, Bill Salia, he's now the principal of YouthWorks College, Bill Salia says envy is destructive in its comparative nature. He says if someone has more than us, whether it be more money, more popularity, more success, or just more happiness in life, all right, envy will actually wish harm to befall that person. And even if we're not actively seeking harm for that person, we'll secretly rejoice if harm does happen to befall that person. That's what envy is. Next is selfish ambition. Selfish ambition means pursuing a personal goal without caring about how it's going to affect others. All right? It's saying, I really want this thing, and I want it so bad that I don't care if it's going to actually be at the expense of others. Stephen Colbert, he's one of the late-night talk show hosts in the US. I was watching a clip of his recently, and he said, the problem with gambling is you only care about winning, and you don't care about the consequences of winning. Right, now, what he's getting at, this is an example of selfish ambition. The money that we might win from, you know, going to the casino or playing the pokies or playing lotto, buying lotto tickets, all right, the money we might win from those things has come from somewhere. And according to the Australian government's own Productivity Commission report into gambling, up to 75% of gambling revenue comes from problem gamblers or at-risk gamblers. So what that means is our winnings that might come from gambling are coming at the expense of those who have gambled away their dinner for that week. All right, so that's an example of selfish ambition. And this is what James says in verse 16, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. They're damaging. But there's another common thread. I mean, both those things are very damaging in how they treat others, but there's another common thread with this earthly wisdom. You see, earthly wisdom is all about me, right? Bitter envy and selfish ambition is saying it's all about me. I'm only interested in myself. And according to James, if we are only interested in ourselves, then that is what constitutes earthly wisdom, unspiritual wisdom, demonic wisdom. Being only interested in ourselves is demonic wisdom. And that's not the path we want to go down, dare I say. So which path do we want to go down? Well, James covers this in verses 17 to 18. He says, but the wisdom that comes down from heaven is first of all pure, all right, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Now, this is a bit of a longer list than the earthly wisdom, but we're just going to fly through these really quickly and see if we can't see a pattern evolve with this heavenly wisdom as well. So first, the first quality that comes up, it's kind of an umbrella trait, this one, which all the others fall under, and that is that wisdom that comes down from heaven is pure. And what does pure mean? Pure basically means morally blameless. It means we are in line with what God wants. All right? And all the other ones that come under here show us what God wants. So what does God want? Well, the next one is peace-loving. Now, this one is so important that it gets re-mentioned in verse 18. Okay? And what does peace-loving mean? Well, a peacemaker is someone who will risk their own safety or their own prosperity in order to make peace. Right? Whether that be peace between them and someone else or peace between two third parties. All right? So a UN peacekeeper puts their life on the line. All right? You are putting yourself at risk in order to bring peace. That's a peace lover. Next, heavenly wisdom is considerate. Now, what does it mean to be considerate? It actually means to yield your rights to another. So I'll give you an example. You're on the train, right? A young man sitting there and a pregnant woman comes on. Now, here's the thing. That young man has just as much right to a seat on the train as a pregnant woman. But if he's a considerate young man, he will stand up and give his seat to the pregnant woman. Okay? Considerate is yielding your rights to another. Then comes submissive. According to Philippians 2, being submissive is putting the interests of others, considering the interests of others, ahead of your own. Now, your interests might actually be more important than their interests, but submissive means I'm going to consider your interests as of greater importance than mine. They're submissive. Next comes mercy. We know what mercy is. Mercy is treating others better than they deserve. That's what Jesus has done to us. Treating us better than we deserve, showing mercy to others is treating them better than they deserve. Next is good fruit. All right, we're flying through these. I'm not spending much time on them. Fruit in the Bible basically refers to what someone does. So good fruit is doing good deeds, basically, to others. So good fruit. Then impartiality. We looked at this a couple of weeks ago. It means no favoritism. We do not base our treatment of someone on something we shouldn't base it on, such as race or gender or wealth. We don't want to show favorites based on those things. We want to treat everyone accordingly. And then finally, sincerity. This means to be genuine in our actions. So a disingenuous person does nice things for people only because they're looking for a personal payoff. All right? A sincere person will do something nice for someone because they want to do something nice for someone. That simple. Now, do we see a common thread in this heavenly wisdom? All right, we saw a common thread in the earthly wisdom. It's all about me. The pattern we see in heavenly wisdom is it's all about other people. It's all self-sacrificial. It's all other person-centered, peace-loving, considerate, good fruit, submissive. They all have to do with putting others ahead of ourselves, putting ourselves last. Basically. And so what we see here is that James has set up a dichotomy for us, right? A dichotomy. So on the one hand, we have earthly wisdom, which is being selfish, self-centered. It's all about me, what's in it for me. But on the other hand, we've got heavenly wisdom. And heavenly wisdom is other person-centered. How can I put the needs of others ahead of my own? And so what James is saying is the wise life, all right, the life that is not going to backfire on you, that is not going to turn around and snap back at you, right? If you want that, that's the foolish life. If you want the wise life, that comes from putting ourselves last. Now, I'm going to harp on this a bit for the next couple of minutes because I want to make sure that we understand this, okay? If you want to live the life the best way possible, so that things will actually go well with you, then every decision we make, every word we speak, every action we take needs to come from the heart of saying, I want to look after others. I want to put others ahead of myself. What James is saying is if we think about ourselves and say it's all about me and what is in it for me, life will actually not go as well. That kind of life actually backfires on you. It snaps back at you. Right? If we want a good life, then we must be putting the interests of others ahead of our own. And when you think about it, it actually makes sense. You see, God created this world in a very ordered way. There are rules and regulations that govern life in this universe. Yet it would make no sense at all for God to create this universe in a way that didn't conform to his character. In actual fact, I'll go further than that. It will actually be unrighteous. It would be unrighteous of God to create this world in a way that didn't conform to his righteous character. So the way the world is designed to work is in accordance with God's character. And when we look at God's character in the Bible, what do we see? We see that God is completely other person-centered in everything he does. Right, let me give you three examples. First is in regards to the Trinity. Okay, you look at passages such as John 14. John 14 tells us that the Father loves the Son and the Son loves the Father. The Father lives to honor the Son and the Son lives to honor the Father. The same with the Spirit, all right? The Trinitarian Godhead, Father, Son, and Spirit, has been living in a loving, other person-centered relationship for all of eternity. Okay, God is other person-centered. Next comes creation. We see God's other person-centeredness in creation. You see, God is a completely self-sufficient being. He doesn't need humans. It's not like God was sitting up in heaven one day saying, you know what, I'm really lonely. Why don't we create some humans to keep me company? Well, that's not how God works. God created humans because he just wants to share his love and share his grace with others. He just loves giving of himself. Particularly love and grace, right? But better, even better than those two is we see God's other person-centeredness in the cross. See, even though it was against him that we were sinning, right, against God, God still says, you know what, I want to help those people. I want to save those people. And even though he knew that the only way he could save us and remain completely righteous was to take the infinite punishment of God's wrath upon himself, he still did that. Right? The cross is the ultimate example of God putting himself last. And so what this means is if we want to be wise, if we want to be making the kind of decisions that God would make, if we want to be making the kind of decisions that will bring the best life, that are in line with how God has created this world, then we must be putting ourselves last in everything. That's how God works, that's how he's designed the world to work, and that's how the wise life works. In everything we say, everything we think, every decision we need to make, we put ourselves last, and life will go better. I hope you understand that. Now, having said that, I've got to say, we're doing okay at that here at church. Right? I see we as Christians putting ourselves last all the time. I'll give you some examples. Every Monday night, people are giving up an hour to an hour and a half of their time to pray for others. That is an awesome way to look after the needs of others. Right? Here's my time. How can I use it? Can I spend it on myself playing Xbox or watching TV? Or can I just sit down and pray for other people? What an awesome example. We have people here cooking meals for others. It's wonderful. They're giving of their time and their energy and their resources to look after others. We have people visiting seniors in nursing homes or in hospitals or in their houses. They can't get out that often, right? They're giving of their time. And we have people babysitting as well. It's wonderful. And I love seeing it. We should be praising God for our church and for the selflessness, the heavenly wisdom that we're seeing here. But as I suspect you know, we can't sustain this 24/7. You see, as sinful humans, it is impossible to put ourselves last all the time. We can do it some of the time, hopefully a lot of the time, but not all of it. As sinful humans, there will always be that little voice in the back of our head saying, well, what about me? What's in it for me? And it will be dragging us towards the earthly wisdom. And we will make decisions based on earthly wisdom from time to time. So here's the question, what do we do? Let me start by saying what we don't do. We don't beat ourselves up over it. Right? That's what Satan wants. Satan wants us focusing on our failures, focusing on how we don't measure up to God's standards, focusing on how pathetic little wretches we are. That's what Satan wants. He wants to drag us down. Jesus says, do not beat yourself up over it. Why? Because I've dealt with that. I've dealt with it all. All right? Jesus has paid for every single instance of selfishness, every act of disorder, every evil practice that we ever have or ever will commit. As that song we sing says, Jesus paid it all. It's done. Kaput. And friends, when the enormity of this grace sinks into our hearts, two things happen. Okay? First, it liberates us. The cross is liberating. No longer do we have to feel bad about our sin, about our selfishness, about our earthly wisdom. And no longer do we need to work like slaves to try and be selfless. All right? When we revert to earthly wisdom, which we will all do, we can rest in the fact that Jesus has paid it all. He's paid it all. Praise God and praise Jesus. But the second thing that happens is that we are now free to pursue selflessness as a response to God's grace. We all know we don't need to pursue selflessness in order to get into heaven. That's been done for us, all right? Our good works, our good deeds, our good fruit stems from the enormous grace that Jesus has shown us. You see, this is the great thing about the cross, is it makes us want to be other person-centered. It makes us want to pursue our heavenly wisdom. And when we're doing that, what happens is our motivation changes. It changes from saying, what's in it for me, to saying, how can I look after others? How can I put myself last? I want to look at three practical examples of how to do this as we close. Now, these are just to give you a bit of an insight, all right? I can't be completely exhaustive in this. Just going to give you three examples, one in terms of our time, one in terms of our money, and one in terms of our charity, in which we can think about heavenly wisdom as opposed to earthly wisdom. So whatever we come up against, we just got to think, well, how do we make heads or tails of this? What's in it for me is out. How can I look after others is in. That's heavenly wisdom, right? So number one, with our time. Heavenly wisdom means that you and I will take one day off work a week every week. Right? Failing to take one full day off a week is actually demonic wisdom. God has created us to need rest, all right? And the reason we rest, well, you can rest for earthly wisdom, but the way we should be resting is so that we can be well rested and resourced and energized to continue helping others, all right? And this is what Jesus did. Let me read to you from Mark chapter 6, verse 31. He said this. This is Jesus and his disciples. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, Jesus said to his disciples, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. All right. So the reason Jesus rested and made sure his disciples were resting was so that he would be at his best when he continues to help people. And that's what we as humans need, okay? We need to look after ourselves, not because it's all about us. We need to look after ourselves so that we are well-rested and energized to continue serving God. But coupled with this is the fact that Jesus always found time to help others, even when he was exhausted. Let me read the very next verse in Mark 6. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Even when Jesus was utterly exhausted and he needed to look after himself, he still put the needs of others ahead of his own. He still served, even on his day off. All right, so that's time. Next one is money. Now, again, this is just an example. All right? And the example is this. There is an enormous difference between plugging extra money into our super so that by the time we reach age 85, it won't have all disappeared and we have to be a burden on the tax system. All right, so you retire at 65, 70, you get your super. If you don't have enough, over 10 to 15 years, it'll start to whittle away. And so there's wisdom in making sure you have extra super in your account so that it won't whittle away and you won't need to go on the pension. There's a big difference, though, between that and plugging extra money into your super because, well, I get really big tax breaks and I want to live a really comfortable life when I retire, and so I'd rather put money into my super than give it to charity. There's a world of difference. You're doing the exact same thing, but from different motivations. One is earthly wisdom, one is heavenly wisdom. All right? Heavenly wisdom says you give stupid amounts of money away to the church and to charities. Earthly wisdom says you spend it all on yourself. Third example is in regards to charity. Let me ask you this. Here's a tough question. What is your opinion on asylum seekers? It's all in the news these days. What's your opinion on asylum seekers? Now, it's a complicated topic. Here's the thing. Christians should love it. They should love it when governments say we've stopped the drownings at sea. That's a good thing. We don't want refugees and asylum seekers drowning at sea. That is other person-centered, as looking after the needs of others. All right? We should be happy when we hear that. But let me tell you, Christians should cringe. We should cringe whenever there is talk of how an influx of refugees will put an extra strain on our tax system, or an extra strain on our housing system, or an extra strain on our health system, or an extra strain on our educational system. You see, wanting to maintain our current living standards at the expense of the less fortunate, I'm sorry to say, that is earthly wisdom at its worst. Now, I'm not for a second saying that this is easy. I'm glad I'm not the Prime Minister. I don't want that job. It is a really, really complicated issue. But as we're thinking about it as Christians, we need to be thinking earthly wisdom versus heavenly wisdom. Earthly wisdom is it's all about me. I don't want them changing my way of life. Heavenly wisdom is I'll even put my safety at risk by allowing those murderers in if it means helping a greater number of people. Heavenly wisdom always puts the needs of others ahead of our own. So guys, if we want our lives to be truly wise lives as opposed to foolish, all right? If we are talking about, it's all about me, then we are actually the moron using the screwdriver as a chisel. If we want to avoid that, then we need to have the mindset that echoes God's. Heavenly wisdom is doing everything in life the way God does everything in life. And the way God does everything is no matter what the consequences, no matter what the cost, we will always, always put the interests of others ahead of our own.